Thank you, Steve. It's Bill and Wendy. We have our friend, our clinical psychologist. Can we say psychologist of the show, maybe?
I think, I think John qualifies.
I need it more
that.
Than you do.
Well, but he's here to help everybody, I hope.
John Duffy is here. Undo Anxiety is his podcast that you can find on WGNplus.com or iTunes. And your book, The Available Parent, is quite helpful to me. First of all, hello.
Hi.
We were
enough of the small talk.
I know, I got to get right into it. We pay you by the half hour, whatever. So yesterday, Bill and I were—I've been binge watching Hoarders.
Yes,
I've heard of the show. I'm on the cusp of being a hoarder, but I don't know that that's necessarily true after watching the extremes in which these people hoard.
Right,
they can't move in their house. They neglect bills or can't afford it. Mm-hmm. Plumbing is turned off.
Yeah,
there's a lot of filth. There are roaches. I mean. At that point, you'd think you'd look around and go, oh, my God, what am I doing?
Yeah.
But they don't.
No. A lot of hoarders, real hoarders, and the show is an interesting thing because it kind of sensationalizes this and, like, you know, and mocks it to some extent. You know, there's a little wink and a nod there. But the truth of the matter is this is a really painful thing for families. And a lot of the hoarders themselves, and you see this on the show sometimes, have no insight into the fact that what they're doing is a problem. I mean, they almost feel like, well, the rest of you have a problem. I'm just keeping some stuff here. Mm-hmm. But there are deep emotional issues that have them keeping that stuff. And that's what I think isn't addressed sufficiently on the show. And why I think you probably are not a hoarder, Wendy, because you have insight into the things that you keep and collect.
But they're showing, on the television version of it, they're showing extreme cases. They're finding the people who have really, really, really serious hoarding problems. But it can come in different degrees, right?
You know, it's if you think of it like a spectrum disorder.
Yeah.
I was listening earlier, and you were talking about some of the things that you collect.
Yeah.
Bill, you know, and I collect, for whatever reason, I collect books and boots. And, you know, and sometimes it's just having a few things around that are familiar to you.
Right.
Give us a little bit of comfort, right? It's kind of like nice to have your stuff with you. And I know Jim has some Star Wars stuff, you know, and it probably makes him feel really good to go into that Star Wars room and, you know, just kind of enjoy being in there.
He does. And he displays it and it's not messy. So
right.
That's the difference.
And the other difference is, whether it's something like I really enjoy and this makes me feel good on occasion, but I can go and live my life unencumbered without it 99% of the time, and then I can come back and refuel my batteries in this mm-hmm. room. Where hoarding becomes a problem is if it kind of takes over your life and there are emotional and physical and social and financial and, you know, deep repercussions throughout the family that are harsh and negative, and then you know, okay, we've got a problem here, especially mm-hmm. if the hoarder is super resistant to getting rid of anything. And sometimes you see on that show, and I've worked with some people who get to the point where they're not just collecting, you know, something in one specific category, but they feel like I have to hold on to everything. Otherwise, I'm losing control of something. I'm not even sure what it is because it's an anxiety issue and control is a big part of it.
I have a couple of those, though. I was telling Bill yesterday, I save things because it's like, oh, I might need this someday. Sometimes I like to do crafts, so sometimes I take these, you know, metal lampshades without the fabric and use them in the garden or whatever. But what did I say? It took me like 8 years to come up with that project. Yeah. And here's a weird thing that I shouldn't be revealing on the air, although I think I have. When I was younger and I would get something new that I loved, I slept with it.
Yeah.
All the time. I mean, like, I'll never forget these granny boots I got when I was in, like, probably fifth grade. They were black patent leather. They were so cool. I didn't sleep with them on, but I slept in the box. They were next to me, right next to me, and I hugged them all night. So I love stuff.
What did you get out of that? What was
it? I just knew they were there, and it made me feel comfortable, and I loved them, and I knew nobody would take them, and I just, I don't know. But that, I think, is borderline hoarder.
I don't know. I think that's the teddy bear effect. You know what I mean? I think it's kind of like I find comfort in this particular thing.
Yeah.
And so, you know, as long as you're not still doing that,
which I'm
going, I'm
just with Jim.
I'm riding on that.
He He's the only thing I sleep with.
Then I think it's not wholly maladaptive. In fact, you can come up with a reasonable argument that that's fairly adaptive. But it becomes maladaptive when you collect everything in that category or everything that reminds you of your grandmother, you know, because you can't stop grieving the loss. You know what I mean? It's things like that where it's got this deep, deep emotional connection and you need a lot of things in order to feel comfortable. You know what I mean? And even then, a lot of hoarders feel like, I'm not there yet. You know, I've worked with somebody who has hoarded to the extent where he rented a warehouse and filled it with stuff you wouldn't believe, and still felt like, I think I need more in order to be okay. And, you know, and it feels so wildly irrational because the question is, well, what does that mean? Like, if I took this box out, what would that do to you? Just don't take the box. I don't want to know.
I've said don't touch my stuff on numerous occasions. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I mean. I'm on the cusp.
And I think it is a spectrum thing. And I think you're in this position where you can kind of reset. If you feel like, well, I have some hoarding, you know, inclinations, I can reset that now. Now that my house is a little emptier than it used to be, I can be selective about what I bring in here. And maybe I'll just keep one or two things in that category that mean something to me, really, instead of holding on to everything.
And a lot of times, and I know this with me at a much smaller degree, but some of these hoarders, you see bags and bags of things that I got to tell you, I'm sure they don't know. Like if you picked up a bag, I don't think they'd say, oh, that's my sweater from that. But once they start looking through it, they'll go, oh, that's why I saved it.
Right.
But the garbage is what I don't understand. A lot of these hoarders, piles and piles of stuff. There was this one, I don't know if he was like a 12-year-old boy. His mattress was on top of a pile of junk, garbage, and his mattress was on top of that, and he slept on that.
But is that a version of what you just described?
I mean, like 3 feet of garbage all over the whole floor. Yeah. His parents put the mattress on top of the garbage.
It's the only place it would fit.
Yeah,
right?
And he slept on that. They ended up finding the father's on oxygen because he has breathing issues. They were showing cobwebs that were filled. It looked like a spook house.
Mm-hmm.
And there was an oxygen tank underneath the kid's bed that started leaking. It could have exploded. At some point, it becomes a danger.
Yeah, a lot of these hoarding households become fire hazards. And what you're talking about begs the question of, you know, why do people do this? Like, you know, this is a bag of garbage. You know, it's clearly worthless. But if you talk to somebody who is truly a hoarder, there's usually one of two things going on. There's a control issue. There's almost always anxiety. And sometimes there's something post-traumatic. It's kind of like, you know, it reminds me of eating disorders to some extent. If I surround myself with enough stuff, regardless of what the stuff is, I feel safer. You know,
and no one will come into your house.
Walls.
Right.
That's it.
You've built walls that make it harder to penetrate.
And sometimes literally. I mean, you know,
why are newspapers so often a component? A lot of people who are hoarders will have stacks and stacks of newspapers. And why are cats almost always a component?
Good question.
It's a sad answer, I think, the answer to that question. A lot of hoarders are homebound. And so they are kind of relying on the things that come to them or are already with them. So the cat lives there. The newspapers come every day, and you can convince yourself, well, I might want, this is from 1977, but I might want to refer to it one day. It might be important one day.
Yeah.
And so that's a convenient way to build your walls without going out and creating it with stuff you bring in from the inside on your own.
When you say it like that and explain it, it makes me understand it more. Mm-hmm. Not that I accept it more, but I understand how people can get to that part where they're not letting anything
go. But if you say that to somebody who has that, will they realize it? Is it easy for them to realize, wow, I never thought about it, but that's why I have newspapers and cats all over the place?
It's a great question because you would think like, boy, once you point out, isn't this the craziest thing that you're doing here? You know, like let's look at it from the inside out. It is really resistant to treatment. Right. It's almost, I don't know if you've ever heard of the term body dysmorphia, but it's where somebody looks in the mirror and they see something different than what everybody else sees. Yeah. Oh, I look like I'm 20 pounds overweight. No, you're actually quite thin. the same thing happens with hoarders. They'll look at the enormous mess or the mass of stuff and say, I'm not sure what you guys are talking about. So yeah.
I'm the normal one. You guys have the
right,
problem.
Right, right, right. So unless you get down to what's going on emotionally underneath all that,
just
the visual does very, very little to change a hoarder's mind and make them recognize, ooh, I got to do something to change this.
All right. Well, I am catching – is there a Hoarders Anonymous? Because I really feel like part of the problem is going, I have the potential of being a hoarder, so I'm aware of it. Does that make me ahead of the game?
You're definitely ahead of the game. There is a Hoarders Anonymous, by
is
the way.
Is honest to God?
Yes, there is. And there are hoarders groups, you know, in the suburbs out where we are. There's a number of them. We talked about how prevalent this is. You said 3 to 5 million people. About, you know, 2 to 5% of us suffer from hoarding, but just looking at the population of people I work with, I'd argue it's significantly higher.
It's got to
yes.
be higher.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay, 312-981-7200. We're talking with Dr. John Duffy. You can find him at his website, drjohnduffy.com. It's Bill Leff, Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN.
Does that place Order from Hoarders still exist? Because they should be sponsoring this segment. They're missing out.
Oh, my God, you are so right.
I don't know if they're still around, but I'm going to make some calls.
Dr. John Duffy is visiting with us. Really, I thought that this was such a small niche of people when I started watching Hoarders, so it amazes me that there are so many hoarders out there.
Yeah, I think this is actually kind of a growing thing, just like most anxiety-based disorders. I think things are, you know, we are becoming a more and more anxious culture, and for those of us who are homebound, home a lot, this is... I hate to say it this way, an efficient way to help regulate your anxiety, you know, without interfering in lives outside of your home. What often happens, though, is that it becomes this secret within the home, and it affects starts to affect everybody because we can't have people over because we have this hoarding thing. There's all this stuff around, and you know, I don't want you to tell your teachers, kids, and you know, we've got to keep this unto ourselves, and that's always a toxic thing for a family to carry on top of the hoarding issue.
Laura wants to talk about that precisely. Hi, Laura. Hoarding affects not just the person hoarding, but others as well.
Oh, definitely. Hi, Bill, Wendy.
Hi.
I dealt with this firsthand, and I had to bail out my sister-in-law. Their house was her husband died, which was my brother, and the house was a mess. I mean, beyond a mess. There were fruit flies. There were so many fruit flies. It's like, I think I'm going to start naming them, you know, because that was the only relief I could get.
This happen after your brother died? Like, is this
no,
when the hoarding began, or it was always like that?
Like what the doctor said, it was after my mother died, which was over 30 years ago. So they kept everything. And, you know, the mail, they had like 3 years worth of mail, but they also had everything, like the doctor said, everything that came to the house, you know, pamphlets, everything. And it was a mess. And it took a toll on not only me physically, but also, you know, my family members, you know, my marriage. And,
that
you know,
bad.
It was rough. It was rough, yeah.
Oh, yeah. We can hear in your voice, Laura, that this was traumatic for you, right?
Yes.
How can I ask? How did you resolve it? You know, so in the wake of all that, how did you shift the problem if you were able to at all?
Well, my sister-in-law, I guess maybe the bright side is that, you know, I mean, she suffered a stroke, so she wasn't able to speak. Hmm. So, you know, I had to say, this is what we're going to do. I had my older brother. We had to clean out the house. I mean, I don't know how many bags of garbage he threw out. And it took over 6 months. And, you know, and then we finally got a routine for her. Well, me. I mean, I have to go over there and check in on her. I hired someone to check in on her as well, to prepare her meals, do her laundry. And, I mean, the house is like bare bones, but, I mean, it's safer for her.
And it's clean.
Yes.
So sorry, Laura, that you're going through this, but you're a great sister-in-law.
Yeah, well.
No doubt about that. You know, and it's kind of a clear mandate for anyone suffering from hoarding or any other psychological issue, recognize that this isn't just you that's suffering. So, you know, there is this kind of mandate to do something about it while you can, because, Laura, you're kind of suffering so unnecessarily. And if they had done something when they could, maybe this would have spared you, your husband, your marriage, some of what you've suffered, too.
Yeah, and like you said, they're isolated, you know. I didn't communicate with either one of them because I tried, you know, but they just wouldn't respond back. So I just left it alone.
There's so much shame involved in it, right? Yeah.
Thank you, Laura. Continued healing for you.
Sure. Thank you.
John, at the outset of this, we were trying to figure out the differences between somebody who just collects things and somebody who becomes a hoarder. Does one tend to lead to the other? If you're a collector and you just have that completist attitude, does that lead to it or
not? It actually tends not to.
No.
Collectors tend to be very aware of what they're doing, and they know what it does for them.
Yeah.
Hoarders are not particularly aware, and they're hoarding in order to satisfy some psychological need that's far deeper than the need that's fulfilled in just collecting things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right, good news there.
Yeah.
What is the success rate for someone who realizes why they've been hoarding? Like, if you can get to the inner core and find out why they've been doing this, will that prevent them from hoarding again?
If they're willing to seek out treatment, so a combination of therapy and medication, the success rate's pretty good. The trick is to get them there. And that is a trick. You can hear it in Laura's voice just a moment ago. Hoarders tend to be very, very resistant to any kind of treatment just because they've created a comfort zone for themselves, right? So to get them out of that zone and into a treatment center is very, very difficult. Once that's done, the success rate's pretty good.
And it seems, you know, that they're avoiding the present and almost living more in the past. Like, no one can come to their house. I mean, some of these people on Hoarders, you hear like their child hasn't come to see him in 9 years.
Right, right. No, absolutely.
Like, I knock on the door, my mom won't let me in.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So they're either living in the past or, you know, and kind of bemoaning that, or living in the future and the hoarding is kind of like barricading themselves from whatever horrible thing is coming. But they're never living in the present. And you know, if they could kind of just wrap their brains around that particular issue, Wendy, I think their lives become much easier, much more quickly. Good point.
All right. I have to go to Hoarders Anonymous
before
I get there.
You should go.
Thank you. Undue Anxiety is your podcast. It's excellent. If it's not something that affects you while you're listening, it's something that you can take from it all the time. You do a great job with it at WGNplus.com and iTunes.
Thank you.
Thanks, John. We'll take a quick break and then more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN.